The Obesity Code, proudly brought to you by Reachpreneur Publishing, narrated by Stephen Holmes. The book at a glance. There are a lot of studies in obesity with mice that were conducted recently. Honestly, these studies should not be groundbreaking and should not be taken into consideration. The truth is that they are of no practical value. You are not a rat. What is true in rats is not necessarily true in humans. Thus, practicing them in your daily life may be of no practical value. You should be concerned with obesity in humans and not in mice. This book is all about obesity in human beings and how to go about obesity, such as how to prevent it and even how to cure it in a practical, significant, and doable manner. There will be nothing less and nothing more. In part one, the epidemic, we will tackle the causes and the studies conducted regarding obesity and how sometimes even medical doctors and practitioners are in the wrong. This is considering the fact that what conventional theory, eat less and exercise more, suggests is sometimes incorrect or incomplete, either because of wrong sample size or incorrect analysis and interpretation of the data gathered. In part two, the calorie deception, we will tackle the theories and practical suggestions regarding exercise, overfeeding, and overconsumption that is based in the current caloric theory. In this part of the book, we will argue that it is not the reduction of consumption of calories that will lead to the prevention or cure of obesity. Thus, the current accepted fact that reduction of calories in one's diet does more harm than good. In part three, a new model of obesity, we will tackle about why obesity is actually a multifactorial hormonal disease and not a simple sickness of eating too much. In this part of the book, we also argue that you eat more because you are fat and not the other way around. You got fat because you ate a lot. This is because when you are fat and obese, you have a body set weight that is high and your body will adjust to that set weight every time like a status quo. Thus, even if you eat less calories for a period of time, your hunger pangs will get to you and your weight will go back to the status quo, your high body set weight. In part four, the social phenomenon of obesity, we will tackle how obesity as a hormonal disease is caused by a number of social factors that includes poverty, bad childhood eating habits, and a whole lot more. In part five, what's wrong with our diet, we will tackle how the three macronutrients in food, carbohydrates, protein, and fat, affect weight gain and how it leads to obesity. In part six, the solution, we will tackle some practical tips and suggestions for prevention or cure of obesity, diabetes, and other cardiovascular diseases by addressing the root of the problem, hormonal imbalance and high blood insulin, instead of the fruits of the problem, symptoms such as weight gain and bad health. This includes eating a lot of healthy fat and fiber-rich food, keeping consumption of protein moderate, and avoiding sugary food and other refined grains. Now, are you ready? Read on. Free bonuses. P.S. Is it okay if we overdeliver? Here at Reachpreneur Publishing, we believe in over-delivering way beyond our readers' expectations. Is it okay if we over-deliver? Here's the deal. We're going to give you an extremely condensed PDF summary of the book which you've just read, and much more. What's the catch? We need to trust you. You see, we want to over-deliver, and in order for us to do that, we've to trust our reader to keep this bonus a secret to themselves. Why? Because we don't want people to be getting our exclusive PDF summaries even without buying our books itself. Unethical, right? Okay, are you ready? Firstly, remember that your book code is READ109. Next, visit this link, http://bit.ly/exclusive-pdfs. Everything else will be self-explanatory after you visited http://bit.ly/exclusive-pdfs. We hope you'll enjoy our free bonuses as much as we enjoyed preparing it for you. Part 1, The Epidemic. Chapter 1, How Obesity Became an Epidemic. Do you ever wonder why there are obese doctors? Doctors supposedly have the knowledge to determine the prevention of obesity, but how come these medical experts are obese themselves? How can they treat patients when they are likewise sick? Common knowledge tells us that obesity is caused by two things, eating a lot of food and refusing to exercise. In other words, fitness, or the lack of obesity, is only a matter of effort and discipline. Certainly, we cannot say that these doctors do not have effort and discipline because they already proved otherwise by finishing university, medical school, internship, residency, specialization, and other esoteric courses not designed for the layman. Then something might not be right. Effort and discipline alone will not prevent obesity. The truth is, obesity is not merely a question of effort and discipline. Obesity is a disease which is caused by a lot of factors other than just pure laziness and lack of willpower to exercise and eat less. Proximate versus ultimate cause. What is the cause of obesity? You may argue that it is excess of calories. Although excess of calories may indeed be the cause of obesity, it is not the ultimate cause. Now, what is the difference between a proximate cause and an ultimate cause? Simply stated, proximate cause involves immediacy, one thing immediately resulted to another thing, whereas ultimate cause involves a set of several linked events that does not necessarily mean it happened immediately. For example, let's take alcoholism. What is the cause of alcoholism? You may argue that alcoholism is caused by drinking too much alcohol in a given night. Sure, drinking too much alcohol in a given night might cause alcoholism, but it is a mere surface-level analysis. It is only a proximate cause. Sadly, medical doctors will treat the patient by telling him, hey, my prescription for you is to stop drinking alcohol behind this time set limit of. In the meantime, make no changes in your lifestyle, habits, or behavior. Now, what is the ultimate cause of alcoholism? It is a myriad of factors that include the addictive personality of the person involved, the stress he suffers at work or in his relationships, the alcohol's addictive nature, and the existence of family members involved in the same addiction. In this case, instead of treating the proximate cause, we would treat the ultimate cause. That is, by providing the addicted person with a rehabilitation program or social intervention support networks. Anatomy of an epidemic. Almost all of the human civilization before us did not suffer from this disease called obesity. Thus, humans were never obsessed with calories and how to eat less of it. It is a rarity. In fact, obesity has never been a thing until the last century during the period of massive industrialization of nation-states. During this period, humans produced and consumed a whole lot of starches, flour, sugar, and other refined carbohydrates. In other words, it is during this time when people started to become obese. This is probably the reason why people equated consumption of refined carbohydrates to obesity. There are three distinct macronutrient groups for all foods: carbohydrates, protein, and fat. The macro in the word macronutrient means that most of the food that we consume, or a big portion of it, consists of carbohydrates, protein, and fat. On the other hand, the micro in the word micronutrients refers to the small portion of the food we consume. These include vitamins A, B, C, D, E, and K, and essential minerals such as iron and calcium. Sugars and starchy foods are all carbohydrates. An interesting story is that of William Banting, an English writer and author who wrote and published what is known as the first diet book. William Banting was never obese until he reached his 30s. By his 60s, he became very huge for his own comfort. Because of this, he went to the physician on how to lose his unnecessary weight. He tried all kinds of stuff. First, he tried to eat less, which did not reduce his weight. Then he tried to exercise more, which only gave him a prodigious appetite, which compelled him to eat more than usual. In both these instances, his weight was not reduced. Finally, upon the advice of a trusted surgeon, William Banting tried a distinct approach that was truly ahead of his time. He did a very unusual thing. He did not eat less and exercise more, but instead he totally avoided eating refined carbohydrates, sugary and starchy foods such as beer, potatoes, milk, sweets, and white bread. Remarkably, he felt so well and reduced his weight to a desired one. Because of this, he became motivated and published his work Letter on Corpulence, addressed to the public, 1863, in order to guide the Englishman on how to prevent and cure obesity. This is why merely restricting calorie intake and having a low dietary fat diet, which is backed by the government and other pharmaceutical companies, simply does not work. It is not excess of calories and dietary fat, but rather excess of sugars and other refined carbohydrates that lead to obesity. The truth is, the more you eat carbohydrates, the more you become obese. Conversely, the less carbohydrates you consume, the less chances you'll have to become obese, even sans the eat less and exercise more mantra. Chapter 2: Inheriting Obesity. Nature versus nurture. It is an undeniable fact that if you have family members who suffered from obesity, you have a high chance of becoming obese yourself. The question is this: do you become obese because of your genes, nature, or because of your upbringing and environment, nurture? The accepted theory by many scientists is that nurture seems to be the culprit. Nature cannot be the cause because obesity only proliferated during the 1970s, and genes cannot change in such a short period. Nurture is a more viable cause due to the fact that a person living with obese family members in the same environment is likely to have the same eating habits, same lifestyle, same vices, same physical exercise regimen, and same health overlook. Thus, conventional knowledge places the blame solely on the environment for being toxic and encouraging a sedentary and unhealthy lifestyle, increased use of computers, more meals eating out, increase in portion sizes of food, etc. This is called an obesogenic environment. This seems to be logical, right? Except that it is wrong. There was a study conducted by Dr. Albert J. Stunkard in Denmark regarding the level of obesity of the adoptees, their biological parents, and their adoptive parents. The simple logic is this: if nature and genetics are the determining factor, then the adoptees will have a similar level of obesity with their biological parents. On the other hand, if nurture and environment is the determining factor, then the adoptees will have a similar level of obesity with the adoptive parents. Interestingly, Dr. Stunkard found that there was no relation at all between the levels of obesity of the adoptees with that of their adoptive parents. Why is this so? Clearly, the biological parents have nothing to do with the upbringing of the adopted child, and thus have not taught them to eat less and exercise more, or to avoid calories and fats. Nevertheless, when an obese biological parent gives away his child to a thin, fit, and healthy couple, willing to raise it in a healthy environment, an anti-obesogenic environment, the child becomes obese. In another study conducted by Dr. Stunkard, he has the same conclusion, and even argued that obesity is 70% genetics. Thus, obesity is more often than not inherited. If your parents are obese, there's a high chance you will become obese as well. This is regardless of the environment you are raised. The Thrifty Gene Hypothesis. According to the Thrifty Gene Hypothesis, all human beings by nature and as a survival mechanism are predisposed to gain weight. The theory behind this hypothesis is that eating as much as possible and storing food in one's body has a certain survival advantage because there were a lot of times which the Homo sapiens, our ancestors, didn't have access to food. Nothing could be further from the truth. A fat Homo sapien is less agile and slower than a lean Homo sapien. Thus, a fat Homo sapien is less likely to catch an animal and eat it as its food. Thus, the fat Homo sapien is less likely to survive and to continue its genetic material to its children and grandchildren compared to the lean, faster, and more agile Homo sapien. Fatness, therefore, has no survival advantage at all and can even cause the demise of the species. To test this theory, let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen a fat lion or a fat tiger able to catch its prey? Never. A fat lion or a fat tiger will only be able to consume food if it belongs to a zoo. If it is in the wild, it is not likely to survive and will likely die of starvation. Part 2, The Calorie Deception. Chapter 3, The Calorie Reduction Error. According to recent studies made by scientists whose theory has been conventionally accepted, a person's weight and chance of suffering from obesity can be attributed to this simple arithmetic equation: body fat equals calorie in minus calories out. This is what is called the calorie deception. This seemingly simple example to a person's health and well-being is dangerous and harmful because of its wrong underlying assumptions. For this reason, let us examine the following five false assumptions. These assumptions are based on the already discredited theory that caloric reduction, reducing one's caloric intake, is the key to weight loss. Also, these are the reasons why mere reduction of calories is ridiculous and may in fact be harmful. Assumption 1, calories in and calories out are independent of each other. Assuming that calories in, caloric intake, and calories out, caloric expenditure, are independent of each other is incorrect. This has already been proven as an outright falsity by numerous experiments regarding the subject. Instead, the reality is that caloric intake and caloric expenditure are closely dependent to each other. they have a mutually dependent relationship. This means that an increase of one will result to the increase of the other and vice versa. Therefore, if you reduce your caloric intake, your caloric expenditure will be diminished by necessary implication. Consequently, the general medical advice to reduce one's caloric intake is simply an unsound advice because the outcome is minimal to negligible weight loss. Assumption 2. Basal metabolic rate is stable. Except for exercise, people are going bananas over measuring their caloric intake without regard to their caloric expenditure. This habit is due to a misconception. Sure, the obsession over caloric intake may be justified by the fact that it is relatively easy to measure. However, measuring the total energy expenditure of the body is an entirely different ballgame. In fact, it is a complex problem to measure because it will depend on the following factors: exercise, excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, non-exercise activity thermogenesis, thermogenic effect of food, and basal metabolic rate. As such, since caloric intake is easy to measure and caloric expenditure, except for exercise, is a too complex problem, people conveniently but wrongfully assume that it remains constant. The fact of the matter is it does not. Depending upon the caloric intake as well as other factors, total energy expenditure can go high or low for up to 50%. Assumption 3. We exert conscious control over calories in. Eating is done by mechanically putting food into your mouth, chewing them, and then ingesting them. Is eating a conscious decision? The answer is no. Eating is deliberate, but not conscious. Although eating is a deliberate act, it is by no means conscious because hunger plays a key role. Hunger is caused by our hormonal activities and will determine whether we will continue consciously consuming food. Thus, in an all-you-can-eat buffet setting, people stop eating when they are feeling full and thus no longer hungry. In fact, after a person is already full, the smell of food he had just ingested will make him feel queasy and nauseous. Assumption 5. Fat stores are essentially unregulated. All systems in our body are regulated by our cells, a genetic mechanism. This means that our bodies flow and grow smoothly because of our genes. For example, our growth hormones regulate our height and build. Estrogen and testosterone regulates our sexual maturation. Free thyroxine and thyroid-stimulating hormone regulates our body temperature and others. With respect to our blood sugars, it is regulated, as a general rule, by our glucagon and insulin. It is like everything is automatic. But something is not right. Conventional theory states that fat cells' growth is an exception to the general rule, meaning they are unregulated at all. This conventional theory simply cannot be true because there are already hormones that were found to regulate fat cells' growth. These are the following: leptin, adipose triglyceride lipase, lipoprotein lipase, hormone-sensitive lipase, adiponectin. Therefore, if fat cells' growth is regulated by hormones, obesity is also caused by your hormones. Assumption 5. A calorie is a calorie. This is the most crucial assumption that needs to be struck down because it is very harmful to believe otherwise. A calorie is not simply a calorie. Sure, you can say that a dog is a dog, but what dog? Not all dogs are created equal. Some are small, some are big, some are skinny, and some are fat. Is the dog Chihuahua, Labrador, or Shih Tzu? That is the logic. A calorie is not simply a calorie because some causes weight gain while some does not, and in fact gives you a health boost. A calorie from sugar will cause weight gain through metabolic response, while a calorie from olive oil will not and is in fact a healthy choice. A calorie from sugar will cause significant increase in blood glucose or insulin, while a calorie from olive oil will not. Consequently, simply measuring one's caloric intake is an exercise in futility. Chapter 4. The Exercise Myth. Exercise and Weight Loss. The usual theory of people venturing into weight loss programs and diets is that reduction of food intake must go hand in hand with the proper exercise regimen. Their line of thinking is that even if your diet is good, if you do not have a proper exercise regimen that you follow religiously, you will not lose your weight. This is just plain wrong. The truth is that even if you have an improper exercise regimen, if your diet and gradual reduction of refined sugar and other carbohydrates in your meals are consistent, you will lose weight. However, this is not to say that exercise regimens are useless. To an extent, they are effective because they induce physical exertion and activity, except for the fact that they likewise induce hunger pangs afterwards. The point is that diet and exercise should not be treated as equals. Generally speaking, diet should be placed at higher importance than exercise. They are Batman and Robin instead of mac and cheese. According to studies, over 95% of a weight loss program's effectiveness will depend on the consistency of one's diet. Thus, even if you exercise a lot but gorge yourself in hamburgers afterwards, you will not lose weight. In fact, you might gain more weight and it will be more than you imagined. Exercise is like brushing your teeth. Sure, it may prevent the occasional cavity or even bad breath, halitosis. However, it will not cure an already decayed tooth. Diet is like taking the already decayed tooth out of your mouth. Compensation, the hidden culprit. Why is it that most weight loss programs are ineffective at best? We try for weeks and months to follow this exercise program to no avail. Sometimes, instead of curing and preventing obesity, our weights instead increase. First, like previously asserted, a person will likely eat more, vigorously more, after exercise than when he or she did not exercise at all. As a consequence, the usual effect of exercise is not weight loss, but weight gain due to the increase of food intake. If you ingest more food, then, by definition, you increase your calorie consumption. According to a study made by the Harvard School of Public Health, there is a consumption of an extra 292 calories for every extra hour of exercise. Thus, the argument that the relation between caloric intake and expenditure are intimately and proportionally dependent to each other is very plausible. An increase in calories in will necessarily result to an increase in calories out. This is consistent with the biological principle that the body attempts at all times to maintain stability, homeostasis. Second, if you perform exercises for the entire day, you are more likely to skip exercise the next day. This is because, generally speaking, you will be tired the next day and your body and muscles will be sore due to the overexertion. As a result, you are less likely to be consistent in your exercise regimen. This phenomenon is especially true for young adults and teenagers, according to a recent study conducted. Chapter 5, The Overfeeding Paradox. Overfeeding experiments, unexpected results. How do you know if overeating causes obesity? It is simple. Just take a few volunteers or test yourself, measure their your weight, intentionally and deliberately overfeed or overeat for a certain period of time, such as a week, and then afterwards, measure their or your weight and see the difference. If the results of the measurement are higher than the previous week, then certainly your hypothesis that overeating causes obesity is correct. However, a study conducted by Dr. Ethan Sims in the late 1960s provides a different conclusion. It turns out that eating a lot of food does not necessarily result to weight gain or obesity. How is this possible? The rationale for this is that the human body has a certain cap or maximum on how much food one can intake. Thus, whenever you eat in a buffet, you will not continue eating after you are already full. This is an automatic mechanism of the body. In addition, the overeating causes an increase in the metabolism, which quickly cuts out the excess fat. This study, conducted by Dr. Sims, was supported by experiments in recent vintage, such as those conducted in 1992, and another conducted by Dr. Frederick Nystrom regarding fast foods. The undeniable conclusion is that even if you overeat to the point of fullness, calories in, you will not become obese. Consequently, even if you reduce your calorie intake, you will not be cured of obesity. Part 3, A New Model of Obesity. Chapter 6, A New Hope. When the body is ordered by the hypothalamus to increase fat mass so as to achieve a desired set weight in the body, obesity develops. The end result is that the body becomes short of energy because the available calories are diverted to increase fat. In this way, the acquisition of more calories is the natural predisposition of the human body. If this happens, there is a reduction of the hormonal signals of satiety and an increase in the hormonal signals of hunger. What people usually do is simply reduce their calorie consumption by refusing to eat, even though the urge to eat is sometimes unbearable. This has the effect of temporarily stopping the hypothalamus. As a result, metabolism slows down. Truly, eating more and exercising less, increased calories in and decreased calories out, is the effect of obesity and not its cause. As stated, there is a tight regulation in the body's set weight of every person. This means that, by and large, the body set weight of a certain person remains the same except for a few highs and lows here and there. A drastic reduction or increase in the body weight of a person will likely happen gradually for at least several years. A study conducted by scientists revealed that a person's weight is relatively stable. At most, the weight gain or weight loss of a person having the same eating regimen has an increase or reduction in their body set weight of about 1 or 2 pounds a year. A thin person will not become fat in a year, and a fat person will not become thin in the same period. It just would not happen if the regimen is the same. Therefore, understanding and recognizing the factors that regulate the body set weight of a person is the key to curing and preventing obesity. In addition, the reason why a person's body set weight is so high compared to another person should be learned. Finally, how to reset the body set weight of a person to a lower level will likewise be important. Chapter 7, Insulin. The results of recent studies conducted regarding the effect of insulin to obesity are enlightening. Weight loss is the end result of drugs that lower insulin levels. Weight gain is the end result of drugs that raise insulin levels. There is weight gain or loss effect with respect to drugs that have no effect on insulin levels. Therefore, weight gain or loss and obesity and fitness can be predicted by the levels of insulin on the blood. Not exercise. Not support group or family pressure. Not caloric intake versus caloric expenditure, and certainly not discipline. Just insulin. In other words, obesity is caused by insulin. This further means that insulin is a factor that regulates the body set weight of a person. As stated, the body set weight of a person goes up as insulin levels increase. Conversely, the body set weight of a person goes down as insulin levels decrease. Therefore, we can say that one of the keys to resetting the body set weight of a person to a lower level is simply reducing the insulin level in the blood. Why is this so? Imagine that you simply follow the conventional dogma, that is, to deliberately reduce calories in without regard whatsoever to your insulin levels. Even if your caloric intake is in the floor, if your insulin levels are high, the hypothalamus will send out hormonal signals to the body to gain weight. That is, you will become hungry and then you eat until you are full. At this level, your body set weight is so high compared to an ordinary person. So the end result is you become obese. Therefore, you do not become obese because you overate yesterday or last week or last month. You overeat because you became obese. And why did you become obese in the first place? Because your body set weight is very high as a result of high insulin levels within your blood. The bottom line is this. Obesity is not due to caloric imbalance. Obesity is a hormonal imbalance. Chapter 8, Cortisol. The less you sleep, the more likely you are to become obese. One of the most prominent causes of chronic stress in the modern era is sleep deprivation. According to a recent study, sleep time of people has been declining steadily. For example, in the early 20th century, 9 hours is the average amount of sleep. Today, less than 6 hours is the average amount of sleep for one-third of adults. This is especially true for shift workers who sometimes have to work in the wee hours of the morning and have difficulty sleeping at all during the noon. If you lack sleep, you will not only suffer some serious psychological stress. In addition, your body's hormones will stimulate cortisol. A high level of cortisol in the human blood will result in high levels of insulin and also insulin resistance. Both key hormones in the control of body fatness and high level of human appetite, ghrelin and leptin, have a set level of activity and rhythm that should not be disturbed in any manner whatsoever. Generally speaking, this means that the ghrelin should not be increased and the leptin should not be decreased by sleep deprivation. If this body rhythm is so disrupted, such as by lack of sleep perhaps for several days, cortisol levels are increased. As a consequence, insulin levels will likewise increase, which will cause a person to increase his body set weight and get fat. The end result is the person becomes obese and overeats. Therefore, the simple lesson is this. If you want to lose weight and prevent or cure obesity,